NFL insider, three-time Pro Bowler, please welcome to the program from San Francisco. And I know it is like, what, 6 o'clock, sorry, 5 o'clock in the morning. Tiki Barber, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
What is happening, fellas?
How are you feeling?
Very early. Worn out, man.
Yeah.
You forget how long this week is. And because we did the pregame show for CBS Sports Radio, we couldn't come home like we usually do on Fridays after Super Bowl. So we stayed through the weekend, didn't go to the game. But we're over at the studio, or over at the stadium, Great American Theme Park, we were doing a pregame show from, which is right next to Levi's Stadium. Mm-hmm. But watched it in a bar right here at our hotel. And it was, I mean, I'm almost glad I didn't go, because it was one of the worst Super Bowls I've ever seen,
yeah.
Execution-wise and performance-wise. Even Peyton Manning, who got his ever-elusive second Super Bowl, was unimpressive. Barely had 100 yards, a little over 100 yards. But Von Miller, if you like defensive football, Von Miller put on a show. As did Coney Ealy, by the way, for the Carolina Panthers, but in a losing effort, so it goes for naught. It's one of those Super Bowls I think I'm going to forget what happened, except for the postgame. In 5 years.
Yeah, the post game was way more fun. You know, it's funny because you take out of that, obviously, Von Miller's performance. He had 7 sacks total for their defense. He had 2.5. He a couple of forced fumbles. He was just a machine. He was so smart. He abused Michael Orr. He was as advertised. And what a playoff he had. The game before that, he had a 2.5 sacks as well. You take Von Miller out of the equation. It really was less than impressive. Offensively, it was terrible. I mean, it just was an awful, awful, awful football game to watch.
Yeah, it was. We got a couple of big runs by C.J. Anderson, and for a minute, I was like, man, maybe the running back's going to win the MVP. And then all the other points you realize the Denver Broncos come directly from a strip sack from Von Miller, and then indirectly on the second one from Von Miller as well. So it had to be a defensive MVP, and Von Miller was very deserving of that. But, I mean, it was a letdown. It really was. I mean, I expected to see at least one or two shots from Peyton Manning down the field. I expected to see Ted Ginn trying to run past somebody. And absent that, it was almost like the Carolina Panthers were in sleep mode, waiting for Cam to do something spectacular, as opposed to taking it upon themselves and making a play whenever they could, making a tough catch or doing anything out of the ordinary, things you can do against guys in shells and no pads on. They were just waiting for Cam, and the Denver Broncos had an unbelievable game plan. Just bottle up Cam, make everybody else beat us, and they couldn't.
Yeah, one of the things, it's funny because post game. Wanted to get to his post game in just a second. Thank God for his post game. That actually make the whole thing interesting to talk about.
Exactly. Now we have something to talk about on sports radio.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to get to a couple of things. The only thing he did say in the post game was that they didn't protect him enough. They weren't good enough. He wasn't accurate enough. Too many drops. He seemed to lay the blame at everybody's feet a little bit himself, but a lot of other guys. But he was off from the start. I don't know if you remember that first ball he airmailed. I think it was over Corey Brown's head.
Yep,
like
wide open,
airmailed it, and no one like that. I believe that was the first offensive series that they had had. So no one had even gotten to him yet. So something was wrong with him from the start.
Yeah, and some of it you can chalk up to nerves. It's that early over emotion, which I think Denver took advantage of when they moved right down the field on that first drive. But then Cam gets the ball, and you just need a play, right? And I always used to say this just in a regular season game, but certainly in the playoffs and especially in the Super Bowl, I always used to say once you get that one smack against your jaw or that one hit or that one, adrenaline moment, that could be a big play, especially on third down, things kind of snap into normal. Right, normalcy. You start seeing the game plan different. You start seeing the defensive, alignments different. It seemed like it didn't happen, and that's what I mean. That they were waiting. They were waiting for that moment to happen, that emotional snap out of whatever melees were in to happen, and it just didn't come. Some of it was on Cam, but I think a lot of it was on Wade Phillips' defense for the Denver Broncos. Look, I've played against all kinds of defenses, but when you line up in a 3-4, because that's what Denver plays, and that's why Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware on the edge of the line of scrimmage, they give you this 3-4 look, but then DeMarcus Ware puts his hand on the ground, it confuses you because you think you're in a 4-3. And so your assignments get kind of, you know, cloudy in your head. You start thinking, well, he's so wide. I mean, he's not even wide nine. He's wider than wide nine. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to help me. Somebody's got to chip me. And Carolina never adjusted. And as a result, they got after Cam. And where in the last three or four games, he kind of would stand there statuesque in the pocket. Remember those shots of him shooting those balls downfield to Greg Olsen and otherwise? That wasn't the case. Every time he stood there, he was getting harassed, and a couple of times led to turnovers.
Hey, Tiki, speaking of a turnover, the one that sealed the deal late in the fourth quarter when he had that fumble, Von Miller again getting to Cam Newton and TJ Ward picking up the loose ball. Why didn't Cam dive for that ball into the pile? Because he looked like he had the best shot at it.
He was gonna.
I don't know. I think injury, fear of injury.
Super Bowl?
I agree. I'm the same way. As soon as that ball's out, I would have, as a running back, but usually I think anybody in that moment turns around and finds it as quick as possible. Mm-hmm. And damn my health, I'm getting that ball back, because in that moment, that ends the game. You know what I mean? In that moment, you got to know the urgency, and he didn't. So the only thing I can think about is that he had hit the point of, if something else bad happens, I'm done. And that's what happened. Something else bad happened, and he was done. What was more interesting to me is why he didn't step up into the pocket. When you know you got wide rushers like Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware who you know, really can't take you down physically, their only option is to strip sack you, right? OCU Mignore used to do this all the time. He'd run past the tackle. OC was for the Giants, obviously. He'd run past the tackle, and all he would have to do is just get close enough to hit your hand or hit your arm or hit the ball, and it comes out. Cam was off his game. We talked about it with the early shot he missed to Philly Brown. But also in that last drive, you step up, you climb the pocket, right? You hear these terminologies all the time for quarterbacks who have done this pocket passing routine for their entire lives. As soon as they start to feel that clock get a little bit too long, and that one felt a little bit too long, you just scoot just a little couple steps forward, and then you reset and you throw the ball down the field. He didn't do that, and ultimately it cost him. And he will be accountable for it, especially in the eyes of those who analyzed the game.
Well, Teak, how would that play in the locker room, you being a former player, if you saw your quarterback not selling out his body in the biggest game of your lives? How does that play in the role? How do you repair that?
I mean, they'll forgive him because it's Cam Newton and he's unbelievable, but they will certainly joke with him. Not right now, obviously, probably not for the next 2 months. Because they have a lot of healing and rebuilding mentally to do after that performance on the biggest stage that a lot of them have ever seen. And look, it wasn't all Cam. I mean, their running backs were terrible. They didn't help on the chips. They were, you know, confused on their blitz pickup, so they would jump outside the tackle. There was one in particular where he jumped outside the left tackle, and then he realized that his guy was maybe blitzing, but he wasn't really blitzing. He was green dogging, meaning that if he blocked and then he came and he cut off his tackle, which let DeMarcus Ware get around the side. Obviously, the fumble by Mike Tolbert. I mean, those things kill momentum, and they kill the ball game. If you go look at the stats, you think Carolina won. They dominated. 21st day. At one point, it was 21st downs to 9 for Denver. Yeah. They had 330-something yards to 190. I mean, it was mistake after mistake after mistake. And so when I take a broad look of what happened in the Super Bowl, experience was the biggest factor. Right, Von Miller had been on the stage like this, even though he didn't play a couple years ago. He had been to the stage before. DeMarcus Ware is a veteran, a superstar, Pro Bowl, all-pro type player. Aqib Talib and T.J. Ward, they'd all been there before. Peyton Manning had been there before. Where on the Carolina side, none of those guys had stepped on that stage with that intensity, with that glow, with everything at stake, and then had to perform. I mean, it sounds like, well, what are you talking about? It's just football. It's not just football. It's the Super Bowl, and that gets the best of you sometimes.
Tiki Barber, our guest, CBS Sports NFL Insider, three-time Pro Bowler. He is at the Super Bowl. You watch the game. You watch the post-game, which was way more interesting than the actual game. And now we've played the audio. Do you still have it, Georgie? I'm going to play it for you, and then I want to get your opinion on a couple of things, and I think you obviously know where we're going with this, but maturity, I want you to keep these two things in mind. Maturity, full, and not just maturity, but is he immature, or is this just the cut of his jib, just who he is, just the fabric of his makeup and what we saw all season. Maybe that's not the real Cam Newton, but have a listen to this if you can.
Cam, on that fumble, was there a little bit of the ball off that you were trying to pick it up and extend the play, or is that why you didn't hit the deck?
No.
Yeah. And it was one word answer after one word answer after one word answer. And finally, he had had enough, basically got up, stormed off stage. And it leaves you to question a couple things. One, like I said to you before, is it a lack of maturity? Can he learn from this? Will he get better because of it? Or two, is this a guy who was at the end of the rope and this is really who he is?
No, I don't think it's the latter. I think it's the former. I think he is. You could see it on his face as they were showing his face. At the end of the game, he was lost. Like he didn't have an answer. And for someone who went through this entire regular season doing no wrong, you know, getting no criticism, not really going through adversity. That's kind of what I like when you lose in the regular season. It's this perfect record that everybody talks about, and how awesome that would be to match the 72 Dolphins. I mean, it's actually counterproductive. When you have to face adversity and you don't know how to respond. I think that was one of the issues. He didn't know how to respond. He didn't have an answer in his mind. He's very crafty, and he's slick. He has the ability to pull on your emotions and make you enjoy listening and watching and engaging with him as it pertains to football. He just didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? And so I think he'll learn from this. Because the expectation for the face of the NFL, and that's where everybody's trying to position him, is that you stand up and answer the question, even when you have the worst day of your life. And he didn't do that. And it's disappointing. I mean, I'm not going to overly crush him. I want to see how he responds in day two. It's usually the, you know, going forward, how I'll judge somebody. But in that moment, there's so many emotions, like so many negative things that you just want to spit out and you want to express to everybody out there, and you're getting asked these questions and all you want to do is be left alone and sulk and really cry, but you can't, especially when you're Cam Newton. Should he have handled it better? Absolutely. But am I going to destroy him like so many people have? I absolutely can't.
You know, the good part is with social media and how thirsty we are as a public for negative things like this, Cam Newton probably won't see the video of him not diving on that fumble, and he probably won't have to relive that press conference ever again.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that's going to be in his face constantly because we thought they were haters to Cam Newton before the Super Bowl. Well, they're certainly going to come out of the woodworks now. I mean, I think we might see Cam Newton suspend because I don't think he'll delete his social media activity for the next few months. And that's really, to be honest with you guys, one of the hardest things about this game when you get to this Super Bowl, because this happened to me in 2000 and I never went back again. You start thinking about everything that went right, starting in March and April. You get the draft and in late April and May, and you get these OTAs, and you get to training camp. Like, all the things that had to go exactly right, even the things that went wrong, like Kelvin Benjamin going down, but all these other guys, Jericho Cotchery and Philly Brown and stepping up, and Greg Olsen, all those things had to go exactly right. Josh Norman turning into a Pro Bowler, Luke Kuechly staying healthy, Thomas Davis staying healthy, becoming, you know, some of the top defenders in the league. And then you think, I got to go do that all again just to get a chance to get back to this stage. It's daunting to think about, and it takes a while to get over the loss for that very reason. That's the hangover that people talk about. That's the hangover, because it's so daunting to feel like you can make everything happen perfectly again. Lightning doesn't usually strike twice in the same place, so it'll be interesting to see the rebound that this Carolina Panthers team tries to put on for 2016.
Peyton Manning, after the game, Teague said he's going to drink a bunch of Budweiser several times. Later we find out he owns some Budweiser.
That's definitely intentional, exactly.
Yeah, he owns some Budweiser distribution centers, which is it. But he said he's undecided. Is this a guy being a gentleman, letting his team enjoy the moment? Or do you think, you can't script it any better, no matter the performance he's done?
No, I think he's letting this be about the Denver Broncos and not about Peyton Manning. And he's absolutely right to do that. And I love the subtle plug for something that's very pertinent, germane, financially lucrative to him, and especially in Denver. Yeah. Probably own like five or six more come by the end of the week. But, yeah, I think this is Peyton doing things the right way, and he's always done them the right way. Before the game, there was talk about, is he going to retire? This is his last game. He deflected it because that would have been a distraction for the preparation of the Denver Broncos because they would have all been forced to ask that question. Do you feel like you have a responsibility to Peyton Manning to win in the last Super Bowl? You don't want that nonsense. At the same time, as this game was coming to an end, it was clearly a defensive dominant game. It was exactly how John Elway designed and built this franchise to win. It wasn't going to be about Peyton Manning setting records like he did 2 years ago and getting bounced from the playoffs in the first round against the Baltimore Ravens, or at least the divisional round, because they had the bye week. This wasn't about, you know, let's create this icon to put on a pedestal and usher him out of the league. This was about 1 through 48 or 53 in total, given the practice squad guys, doing everything that you possibly can to the highest ability so that as a team we win. And Peyton Manning, to his credit, is letting that trench exist in the afterglow of their Super Bowl 50 win.
Teak, we all thought that Peyton needed that second Super Bowl to kind of cement his legacy. And yeah. I know that the GOAT conversation is always really subjective, but is he right below that tier now? You have Brady and Montana, and is Peyton right below those guys now because of this second ring?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, a lot of people, and Eli said this as well earlier in the week, and I kind of agree with him. It's hard to judge quarterbacks solely on their Super Bowl wins when you start talking about the hierarchy of the greatest of all time. Now, Peyton Manning, I mean, Joe Montana, because he was perfect every time he got there, but he also played with, you know, a couple of the greatest players in the history of the game. Tom Brady is the same way. Those Super Bowls matter. But Peyton Manning, the things that he's done, and we've forgotten how bad some of those Indianapolis Colts defenses were, you know, how a lot of the losses in the postseason, some of them were his fault, a lot of them weren't his fault. But the consistency of him getting there, right? To me, greatness is, I always have measured greatness and consistency. Yes, it's reaching the pinnacle and standing, you know, as the man on the mountaintop with everybody else climbing up to get you. And he did that a couple times, culminating last night in his second Super Bowl win. But he has consistently been elite. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, the best of the best. I'm talking about elite. Mm-hmm. He's consistently been that way until this year. So in his 19 years, he's always where you want him to be. He's the guy that you can't run your organization without. He's the guy who, with him not on your team, you don't have nearly the success. So when you have that conversation about, is he top tier or is he just below that top tier? Hell no. He's in that top tier. He just doesn't have the Super Bowls that say, I can argue you are the best, but he is definitely in that top tier.
You know, what's interesting too is the narrative and how it changes when you consider that yesterday he became the winningest quarterback in NFL history with his 200th yeah. win, and it was the Super Bowl, right?
Exactly. I mean, think about that. Andy's tied for now third with most playoff wins of all time. I mean, yeah, I know he's lost 13 times. A couple of those are one and dones, like division rounds or wild card round exits. But he also won a bunch of those and got deep into the postseason a lot of times. There's not a lot of people who can claim the credentials that Peyton Manning has. And so when I look at him, I'll think of him as one of the best. Will I put Tom Brady above him? Yeah, probably, of my era. But Peyton Manning is certainly someone who, if I'm starting a team and I have a potential to get a guy like that, I'm taking him 100% of the time.